Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
When something that ephemeral can feel palpable, you actually can feel it happening in the room, like everyone holding their breath together, and that you can feel it on the Paramount scale level, and you can certainly feel it in the Bold level, in the Copley, how an audience's heartbeats synchronize. They synchronize as they're watching something.
Magic.
Everyone's heart starts to beat together. Everyone starts to breathe together, cry together, laugh together. That to me is about, I don't care how different you think we are from each other, we're basically all the same. It's our humanity. We all are unified. We have more in common than we have in differences. And so this is a way of theater kind of very kind of inconspicuously creating this unity, something unified in our lives.
Hey, what's up, friends? I'm Scott Hodge, lead pastor of the Orchard Community. Listen, today we are bringing to a close our summer conversation series entitled Here to Create. And for our final conversation today, we have a very special guest by the name of Jim Cordy. Now, if you've ever experienced a production at Aurora's Paramount Theater, you'll know that its reputation for quality and creativity and excellence is absolutely no accident. Jim has been the artistic director at the Paramount since 2011, and his influence has been nothing short of transformative. In fact, under his leadership, Paramount has received numerous Jeff Award nominations and wins, which, of course, are all testaments to the exceptional vision and direction of the leadership and the team at the Paramount. Jim's work has captivated audiences with some seriously iconic productions, such as My Fair Lady, Les Mis, Sweeney Todd. And of course, Jim's career is not just limited to Aurora or to Chicago. No, Jim has graced Broadway stages in original casts for some renowned shows like Ragtime and Candide. And in this sort of rare trifecta, Jim has won Jeff Awards as an actor, as a choreographer, as a director, which are all testament to his range of talents. But beyond all of that, Jim is someone who I have the privilege of calling a good friend. And his insights into the creative process and his storytelling are incredibly rich, not just to me, but to anyone who's passionate about art, creativity, and making a difference in this world. And so without further ado, please join me in welcoming Jim Cordy for a conversation that I know is going to challenge and inspire you. Jim Cordy, it's so good to have you join us today, man. You and I, we've had the privilege of knowing each other for, I don't know, feels like a few years at least, right?
Well, I feel like I met you shortly after I started at Paramount.
But we didn't hang how we hang now.
No.
I don't think back then.
No.
But I know this, I love every opportunity I have to spend with you.
And likewise.
And I love also being mistaken for you in the checkout line at Crisco's grocery store.
Well, come on. That is a very flattering compliment for
That's
me.
Great.
You've also been a friend of the Orchards. You know, you loaned your voice for us one Easter. I think it was this last Easter. And in fact, those of you who've been to the Paramount for a production, you have heard Jim's voice. Can you give us the thing?
Welcome, everybody, to the historic Paramount Theater and our production of Little Shop of Horrors.
Nice plug for the show that's happening right now, which we'll hit in just a minute. But anyway, Jim, you truly are someone who is inspiring, someone who is influencing so many. And it's such a joy to have you close out our Here to Create series. I want to go back to your days. Growing up on the East Coast. Did you grow up in New Jersey? Was it New Jersey?
New Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Born in Trenton. And like you do in the 50s, my dad had the wherewithal to move us to the suburbs.
And your dad was a boxer, wasn't he?
My
dad was
like
a champion.
Golden Gloves, Boxing Hall of Fame.
Awesome. Yeah. Jim, how did you What was that initial spark that led you into performing arts? I mean, did you know, like, when did you know you wanted to do this?
I would sing and dance around the house. I remember the Jimmy Cagney movie, Yankee Doodle Dandy. There was a TV show called The Million Dollar Movie, and it would run the same movie for a week. And I watched it every night around dinner time, right after dinner. Singing and dancing around the house was the thing. Yeah. My parents had a very diverse record collection, everything from current pop music and rock and classical music. And I was always spinning records and literally bouncing off the furniture, from the sofa to the floor, to the chair, back to the sofa.
Yeah.
I mean, literally around the living room. I think my parents started to notice. And by the time I got to high school, I was getting the leads in the high school musical, got into college, and that was the big, can you imagine? Being 17, 18 years old in 1960, what was it, seven, being away from home for the first time, coming to Chicago. I got into doing community theater, but with a real showman of a director. His name was Bob Sickinger. And it was the Hull House Theater on Belmont Avenue. I was hanging out with a upperclassman. Went to the auditions, got cast. I played Bobby Van Heusen in The Boyfriend. And there I am. And I went from that show to an Equity show, Professional House, and got my Equity card before I graduated college, before I got my BA. But it felt very natural. It wasn't like, oh, I got to do this and I got to go there. It was just kind of a very natural progression.
So you end up, Jim, you end up on Broadway. You had roles in some really iconic productions. A Chorus Line,
Ragtime.
I don't even know how many more, but you ended up, so you go to New York, you end up coming back to Chicago, right?
I came back to Chicago for A Chorus Line. Then I worked for Bob Fosse. I did Danson for several years. And Bob Fosse was an incredible influence on me. I knew I didn't want to go back to the chorus and dance in the chorus anymore. I knew I wanted to be a director. I wanted to be a director, choreographer as a result of his influence. So I'm opening the theater in downtown Chicago. It's called the Broadway Playhouse right now. But originally, we opened that space. It was the Drury Lane Water Tower Place. Mm. And we opened with a production of The Full Monty. And somehow directing and choreographing The Full Monty at that point in my life, I felt like I had received something. And I would go home at night going, how did you know how to do that today? How did you know that? And I realized something was going on that I had to take responsibility for, that there was something moving through me that had a greater influence, a greater reach than just being an actor and just being me. Directing was more of a calling that was going to influence more people in the best way.
I love that though, Jim. I think that there's, and it's something that I think a lot of us all kind of experience at this like part in life where we've got enough things behind us, enough skill sets. I'm like, and the first half of life, a lot of times we're drawn to this like front facing roles. And then at a certain, there's something shifts where you go, oh my God, like I gave myself in a way that allowed somebody else to shine, so somebody else's face to be lit up. And it changes. It's like it just, you start wanting something different than you did before. And I'm hearing that in your thing. I think a lot of people, regardless of our position in life, whether we're, you know, acting, directing, singing, making music for other people, all those things, like there's a shift sometimes that starts to happen.
So let's fast forward a little bit. How in the world did you end up in Aurora? Out of all places, I'm sure after all the success you've had, you could have gone anywhere. Well, came to Aurora.
Well, you know, Aurora was in having a rough time. And by the time 2008 hit, it was like desolate downtown. The Paramount had just been taken care of by the city. I guess it was going to get, it was in danger of getting torn down. Mm. And the city saved it, made it a landmark. And Tim Rader got hired. And Tim was looking at, you know, it being a presenter house with a yearly attendance of like 55,000 people, you know, and these presenting the one-nighters, the comics, the singers, the whatever, and the national tours. And the national tours had the union tours, which was like a $75 ticket in those days. Hmm. Or the non-equity tours, which weren't very good. So nobody was coming because of either they was priced too high or it just wasn't any good. So Tim decides, what if we do our own Broadway shows? Hmm. And story goes, he called Chris Jones of the Tribune and said, I'm the president and CEO of the Paramount Theater in Aurora, and we're looking at starting turning it into a regional theater with a Broadway series. Who would make a good artistic director? And Chris Jones gave him three names and said, and Jim Cordy's the least likely. He's older, he's busy. And so I was the third appointment Tim had out of the three. And I said, sure, I'll come out to Aurora. And I'm driving and driving.
You're like, where's that again?
Where is Aurora? Where is it?
There's like cornfields out here and stuff.
But it's so funny because, you know, you turn that corner onto Galena Boulevard and it's like, the marquee and the bridge and the river. And you're like, wow. But you guys, there wasn't a person on the street. There wasn't a car on the street. Yeah. It's just Tim Rader. And he comes up. He says, hi, thanks for coming. Let me take you in. And of course, he takes me in immediately because he knows that's the selling point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And I walk in and it turned into like a movie dolly, slow motion. Yeah. And I'm like, what? I could work here? And I'm checking the place out. It's big. The biggest theater I'd worked in was Drury Lane. This is twice the size. And I'm looking at the pit and looking at the proscenium, the scale of it. And I go to Tim, how the F do you fill this place? Talking about the proscenium, you know? And Tim said, that's how I knew you were the one for the job. It scared you. Everybody else was like, oh, I know what you need. I got this.
Yeah.
Hire me. I know exactly what to do. Tim liked that I was like, wow, this is a lot. This is big. I don't know. But, you know, mentioning receiving again, these moments once in a while. So I'm up on this, we're both up on the stage and I'm looking down at the pit and I'm looking out at the house and the Art Deco chandelier and the Venetian murals on the walls. And something, I did not know, you guys, how to say where this came from, how I knew to say this. And I go, you give me a week of tech. Typically it was like 1-2 days of tech, you know? You give me a week of tech. I knew these were going to be huge sets. It was going to take time to get everything moving. Big cast, lots of costumes. Give me a week. And a full pit doing the original orchestrations the way the composer heard it in their head. You give me those two things, and you got an artistic direction. And he said, I can do that. And he goes, will you do it? I said, I'll tell you tomorrow. I couldn't imagine making a life-changing decision.
Oh my gosh.
Like
on
right
the spot.
There.
On the spot. Yeah, right.
Please
yeah,
let yeah. me, you know, sleep.
Let me sleep.
And wake up and go, yeah, call him. Tell him you'll do it, you know.
Whew, I'm so, so nervous right now. Just listening to you tell this story. Oh, my God.
That's how I got to it.
Wow. So you guys launched the Broadway series in 2011, which has brought us some critically acclaimed shows. My Fair Lady, Les Mis, Sweeney Todd, Kinky Boots. Woo! Amazing show. First show back after the pandemic.
Right.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was an amazing experience. And it's gone on now to become the largest subscription-based theater in the country. Congratulations, by the way, to you and Tim, your team.
Thank you.
Huge.
But understand, we have the largest audience in the country.
Mm.
Right here in Aurora.
Wow.
Not in just Chicago, not in just Illinois, not just the Midwest.
Wow.
In the whole country.
Wow. A couple years ago, Paramount launched a new kind of theater, more intimate, 150 seats maybe or something.
165.
Okay, 165. Tell us about that series, the Bold series.
You know, we had learned we had a good, 10 seasons under our belt. And there was something about exploring bold shows that did not have happy endings. Are you kidding me? Shows that didn't even have endings. Shows that plays that were about, think about this.
Mm.
See how unresolved this is? Think about it. Think about how you see yourself in this story.
Mm.
How you see your family, your neighbors, socially, politically. Musicals aren't about that.
Yeah.
Well, musicals are about anything now.
Yeah, that's true, right? Yeah,
there are musicals about that. But in terms of mainstream, big title, Broadway, Golden Age of Broadway musicals. This was something to complement that in the terms of plays that are about what's being suffered in our lives, injustices, socially, politically, sense of loving and losing. And they were about things people couldn't imagine. You could sit in an audience and watch.
I remember the first one. I don't remember which one it was, but I remember watching.
Sweat.
Yes. And I remember saying I think I saw you maybe that night or shortly thereafter and saying to you, oh my God, you weren't kidding. Can we talk a little bit about this last show, Next to Normal?
Sure.
One of the most moving performances I've experienced in a long, long, long time. And I am still, I don't remember how many months ago it was that I watched it, but I'm still thinking about it. I'm still talking about it. But for those who didn't get to see it, can you give us a quick premise? Because this was quite a show that you and you directed this production, right?
Yes. Next to Normal is about a woman and in a upper middle class suburban town. Her husband is an architect, which gives you the class thing that's going on. And she is bipolar and dealing with depression and delusions and medication. She's dealing with the trauma of losing a child. The play opens with her waiting for her 17-year-old, 18-year-old son to come home. It's 3:00 in the morning. And this is the third night in a row. He's waiting for her teenage son to get home. What have you been doing? Are you doing coke? What are you doing? Then you meet her husband, who's doting, professional man, strong intellect, strong heart, very caring, great provider, very loving.
Mm-hmm.
And then you meet the daughter, who feels invisible. Mm-hmm. Who feels totally unseen, unheard. And you find out during the course of the play that the trauma she experienced was the death of this teenage son as an 8-month-old. And she has become hallucinating these delusions of him being alive. And when we meet this family, we see the son as a member of the family. And we don't find out until the daughter brings a boyfriend home from school to dinner. And Diana, the mother, comes out with a birthday cake. And it's somebody's birthday. And everything stops. And everyone's face just... And you find out the father is telling his wife, he's not here. He's not here. How could you still think he's alive? You know, it was so long ago. You're still mourning. And then we learn that the trauma of losing the baby is how she got on all these mental health medications. Then you learn about her getting off the medication. You learn about how she sees her son and when she doesn't see her son and how she's trying to stop seeing her son. You know, that becomes this conflict that is not just internal for her and trapping her. It's also that each member of the family is dealing with, her husband and her daughter. There are two psychiatrists that she sees. She goes into shock therapy, hallucinates the whole shock treatment. And it's all done to the most incredibly beautiful pop rock score with a live chamber orchestra, 6 pieces, that these musicians loved playing the score so much. That was the type of experience that brought a lot of change into a theater-going audience. Yeah. The show's word of mouth was like caught fire.
Yeah.
People were not only telling people to come, don't miss it, but they were coming back a second time, a third time.
I feel like what you guys did so well is you and your cast, your crew, like ensured that this portrayal was compelling on one hand, but also respectful and true to the experiences of those who deal with these kinds of issues. I've got goosebumps even just articulating that right now. I'm so emotional. It's taking me back into this moment of being there.
Just hearing I don't know. I didn't get the privilege of sitting there and seeing it and being part of it. Hearing you kind of talk about that is reminding me of what, and this has been a thread that we've had a lot of these conversations this summer with people, creators in different spaces. There's a way that art can handle human emotion and captivate us and have a connection and allow us to see and be seen in a way that just talking about it can't. I can't just tell you, you know, these stories from my life, but I can show you through art. And you've created a stage for that to happen. And I think when we do that, I think art has the capacity to heal. I think it does that. And so just affirming what you're doing right there, because it feels like
very well
you're
said.
Going into it and healing.
This healing thing is when something that ephemeral can feel palpable, like you actually can feel it happening in the room, like everyone holding their breath together.
Totally. You're unifying.
You know, there was a study done in Great Britain and that you can feel it on the Paramount scale level, and you can certainly feel it in the Bold level, in the Copley, how an audience's heartbeats synchronize.
Yeah.
They synchronize as they're watching something.
Magic.
Everyone's heart starts to beat together. Everyone starts to breathe together, cry together, laugh together.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is about, I don't care how different you think we are from each other. We're basically all the same. Mm-hmm. It's our humanity, our humanity, Homo sapiens, we all are unified.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
We have more in common than we have in differences. Yeah. And people don't see that. And especially now, look at what we're going through now in our lives politically. Mm-hmm. You know, how polarized, how bipartisan everything is. Where actually we all want the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
No, we don't. No, I want this and you want that.
You're right.
I don't want what you want. I want what I want. You know, it's, but basically it's, we have more in common than anyone right now is giving us a chance to see in each other. And so this is a way of theater kind of, very kind of inconspicuously creating this unity, something unified in our lives.
I have sat in some of these bold performances and I have watched people not be able to hold tension and walk out. This one, there was tension, but what there was right alongside that, and this is not to say this was better than that or anything like that.
Oh,
it just
served
a little bit of a different purpose, right? And spoke to a little bit of a different topic or issue. But in this one, what I felt was there was this is what I heard towards about the middle and the second half. I heard sniffling and crying. I saw people. I literally saw at least two people like sobbing.
Yeah,
sobbing. There was something magical, something healing. Something so sacred and so spiritual, even I think happening but in that there, room. And
there was
that
great
moment.
Empathy and compassion going on there more than people let on socially, are mental health issues in families that are unspoken. You know, people don't talk about that stuff.
No.
Which stigmatizes it,
absolutely,
and stifles it, represses it, and there's this pain that is being suffered that doesn't have any way of getting healed. What Next to Normal was allowing was this release by identifying, I know exactly what this is about. I see my own family in this. I see myself in this. That's me.
Absolutely.
And what that does to you is the power of art, is the power of healing through art.
Yes.
And to be in any way a participant in bringing that to people is a huge, huge gratifying thing.
Jim, you're 74 years old. I know no one would ever guess that, by the way. You've accomplished a lot in your life. You've seen a lot. And I think there's a lot of people when they come into that age, or even younger, really, they start slowing down. They kind of feel like they're over it. They're tired with their job or ready to be done. Or they feel like my best years are behind me. You have continued to grow. You've continued to evolve and you continue to find yourself energized by the work you do. And I'm just wondering if you have any words or advice for someone who's finding themselves approaching their second half of life and really truly yearning to make their life count, but maybe afraid that their best is in the past, not in the future.
I feel all those things. I feel myself cave in. I feel exhausted. I feel tired. I feel like, how am I going to do this today? I'm also very lucky that I'm in an art form that every time I show up, there's this joyful energy, this creative energy. Hmm. What that translates to other people is to understand there's an art to everything. Mm. That there's a creativity in everything you do if you put that point of view on it. Mm. That creativity is infinite. It doesn't stop. Creativity just keeps creating and creating. once you start looking at your circumstances that way, that's where energy comes from. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. this hope of the potential, the power ahead, the potency ahead, undiscovered. Let's go find out what it is. You know, I'm constantly now monitoring my health. You know, any little thing I can do, like I stopped drinking, no alcohol. It's going into what? Well, it was February. It's my last drink. The thing is that instead of caving in and just kind of, it's done, isn't it? Mm. It's not done as long as you keep making changes. Mm-hmm. Change is what has to happen. If it's not changing, it's not alive.
Oh,
you know? And so if you realize you're caving in and you're stuck, you're not looking at the changes that you probably should be thinking about making. And that applies to health, your physical health, changes you have to make, maintain your physical health and your spiritual health, your mental health. I mean, and, you know, using that word maturity today, that's what maturity is starting to get from experience. I know this. I know this for me. It doesn't mean it applies to everybody, but sure. I know what I know. I know what I need to change. I know what I appreciate about the people around me who energize me, that I can give energy to, how reciprocal that is. You know, I just left a meeting now for 2 hours and we could not stop talking on a show we're doing together. And how we're just bouncing off each other and everybody's thinking of things the other one didn't think of and going, yeah. What we're about to do together, what we're about to make together. Mm. But there's this thing of understanding how the leader is whoever has the best idea. The leader, it's called leading without rank. And I found out it has a name. It's called leading without rank. And it's not about what I want, you know, what Jim wants. Jim hates that. He wants this. I hate so hearing boring. That stuff.
Right.
It's like, what does this project want? What does that song want? What does this moment want? What does this character want? What do we want to do together? Mm-hmm. Not about one person telling anybody what to do, that you're not hired here to be given orders. You're hired to create.
Yes.
Bring out your creativity. That's why you're getting paid, not to be told what to do.
You know, I think there's a lot of folks watching and listening to this right now that are going like, oh man, like I yearn for that. I want that. I want that kind of space. I want that kind of, and even that, that belief in the inner creative potential that I think keeps you young in soul and heart. There's like the fountain of youth right there. Talk about like a life, right? That is that sort of like untapped what's behind this door. Like that curiosity, I think seems to have driven you and continues to lead you. And I think we're kind of pointing that out. So how do we as human beings sort of cultivate that? And maybe even if someone feels stuck or they're like in a place, I'm not in an environment like that, they say, How would you, is there anything that you go, hey, like, here's a way to get a little handle on that right wherever you are?
I don't know. I mean, you got to find something you love. There's got to be something within you that you can find. That answer is right there. Mm. It is not outside of you. It is not this big reach away from you. It's really there inside of you. Mm. And you just got to like stop with all the noise and all the static and just like, what do I really care about? Mm. You know, wherever you are in your life, you're caring about something. And right now I just care about showing up, being there for the people I'm working with, being as responsible as I can be. I fall behind. I feel like I should be further along, but because of the people I'm surrounded with, we get right on track. Mm-hmm. I think finding your community, you know, families can be really, really difficult. People are so lucky when they can just, it's about their family, you know, their brothers or sisters, their parents or cousins, and it all works. But so many people don't have that closeness and get so isolated, feel so alone. There's something about feeling a connection to nature, you know, how you look at the sky, how you look at a tree, how you look at the river, the fox, how you, and realizing a oneness with that somehow, that you're not alone. You know, you're part of this whole big thing. That's
the collective. We're all,
I think we all have what we do. And if you can find a way for that to matter to people, to reach people, to get people to feel better about themselves, that's the thing about going to the theaters. People identify what they're seeing. I know what that is. That's just like me. I've experienced that. Yeah. Oh, I'm not the only person, am I?
Yeah,
you know, I'm not the only person who's had that, suffered that. I'm not the only person who, I'm not the only person who hurt like that. It's been hurt. Or that even the feel of violence, you know, the one character who attacks another. Yeah, I felt like that. That's part of what makes us human. We have this ability. This oneness with everything is really important. And that's like a meditation. That's like just slowing down and just stopping all the noise. Stop how you get hackneyed and beat yourself up. Just stop it and take a look at what's around you, you know, and appreciate it. I don't know.
Jim, you're an actor, you're a director. You're a dancer. You are also a preacher who just preached like one of the best sermons I have heard.
Yeah. You're no, a mystic, really, in a dude. You're, yeah, dude.
You are a spiritual mystic. You have spoken to my heart as you constantly do. And I know you've spoken to probably so many people's hearts. Our world needs to hear the voices of those who have who've been around, who've done some things, who have and who still don't think consider themselves to have it all together, but
I feel like I'm so stupid. Yeah. You know, it's funny to hear you say that, because I mean, you should hear me when I'm talking to myself, you know.
Jim, this has been so great. Thank you for your time. Thank you for what you bring to Aurora and beyond. And thank you for what you bring to my life. I truly cherish our friendship, and I love you deeply. And I can't wait to hang out with you again very soon.
I love both you guys, and it's so good to see your faces and to talk like this. Rarely get a conversation like this, you know? So thanks to you. Thanks to you and what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you so much, Benjamin J. Thomas, for joining me, and of course, our guest and friend, Jim Cordy. What an outstanding conversation. This is certainly one that I'll be looking forward to rewatching again. I wish we could have shown the whole thing, because I think we had about 35 minutes here. I think the conversation was actually almost an hour long. Anyway, before we move on, I want to give you a couple conversation starters. Whether you're alone and maybe bring out your journal, if you're gathered with a few people at our table gathering, these would be some great conversation starters to have. But the first one, Jim Cordy talked about how directing felt like a calling to him, a responsibility for something greater moving through him to allow for a greater reach. And so I'm curious, have you ever felt a similar calling in your life? And if so, what was it? And how did you respond? Have you ever felt a similar calling in your life? What was it, and how did you respond? Here's the second one, okay? Jim mentioned this this British study about how audiences can actually synchronize their heartbeats during a powerful performance. I'm curious, have you ever had a moment where you felt truly connected to others while witnessing art or some significant event? And how did that experience impact you? Yeah, so I would love for you to have some conversation around this. Have you ever had a moment where you truly, where you felt truly connected to others while witnessing art or a significant event? How did that experience impact you? And then I got two more I want to throw out. And you may not want to spend time on all these, but take the ones that are resonating. The Bold series, which we talked about, is known for presenting plays that don't shy away from difficult issues. So I'm curious, what topics or stories have you encountered that you think deserve more attention in the creative arts? Yeah, what topics or stories have you encountered that you think deserve more attention in the creative arts? And then the last one is this. Jim talked about the importance of asking yourself, what do I really care about? I would love for you to take some time to ponder this question. And this might be the most important one of them all. But I would love for you to really think about that. What is it that you truly care about? And how are you expressing that in your life? That might be the best question to end this entire series with. What do I really care about? And how am I expressing that in my life? I would love for you to take these questions. Again, I know it's four, it's a lot, but just take one or two or three or whatever, ones that resonate with you today, and spend some time journaling, having some conversation. And then lastly, if you've never experienced a Paramount performance, whether one of the Broadway series shows or a bold performance, I want to encourage you to go and experience it. I promise you won't regret it. You might be a little uncomfortable with the bold, but that's good. That is exactly what's needed. Anyway, you can find out more about the Paramount Theater by going to ParamountAurora.com. Again, big thank you to Jim Cordy, and also I want to mention Tim Rader, the CEO of Paramount, and the entire team of actors, directors, and the behind-the-scenes folks who have made the Paramount such an amazing part of our city and, of course, beyond.
Friends, before we go from here and hopefully have some good, juicy conversations, a couple things I want you to be aware of. The first is that next week is the second Sunday of October. I know. We are going to be gathering, as we always do on the second Sunday, in the Aurora area at Society 57 for our second Sunday gathering. So if you are local to the Aurora area, we would love to see you there. And also next week, we are starting a brand new series called From Me to We. So whether you are someone who has a crew of friends and would like to deepen those friendships, or if you're someone who often finds yourself feeling a lack of connection, a sense of loneliness, this series is going to have something for all of us as we learn about going from me, my individual self, to we, community. So we're really excited to begin that next week. So if you're in the Aurora area, we'll begin that in person. And if you're not, we'll begin that online next week. The second thing I want to make sure you know is that The Orchard is a fully independent organization and relies on our community to continue helping people become who God created them to be. There is no denomination or larger organization funding this work. It's people like you who are making this happen. To those of you who are supporting this work financially, thank you so much. Your contribution is making a real difference. And to those of you who would like to join that group, giving is really simple. You can give via mail to the P.O. box, which Molly will display. And you can also give through the Orchard app or through our website, which we'll pop a link in the chat if you're watching this on Sunday to make that really, really easy for you. Friends, however you give and however much you give, we are so thankful for you. And I hope that you know that those gifts are making a real difference. And now I leave you, friends, with this benediction for this week. Go now into the world, inspired by the extravagant love of God. Live generously with open hands, loving one another as if your lives depended on it. Be good stewards of the gifts you have received. so that God may be glorified in all you say and do. And may the abundant love of God surround you. May the extravagant grace of Jesus Christ sustain you. And may the constant presence of the Holy Spirit inspire and encourage you in every good deed and word. Amen. You are so loved, Orchard. Go in peace.